Hello and welcome to Disruptive, Europe's only live technology channel covering everything from chatbots to gigawatts. I'm David Organ, and as always, what a show we have lined up for you today. The latest in tech and gadget news. If you're enjoying the show, please tell us what you think using the handle @DisruptiveLive or the hashtag DisruptiveLive, or you can even message us on our Facebook page. So straight into the news, what have we got? Amazon is forecast to be the first company worth $1 trillion. That's right, that's a dollar symbol followed by a one and 12 zeros. Zspace unveils its AR/VR laptop designed specifically for schools, and big tech companies compete to create the ultimate Android. We've also got a couple of very special guests for you today. We have Phil Neal, founder of Snoozle, the social alarm clock. Hi, Phil. Thank you for joining us. And we have Mark Lowe, business development director at Pinnacle Solutions, talking to us today about some of their latest IoT tech in social care. Hi, Mark. Thanks for coming on the show. Right. So our first story, and this is truly a whopper. Amazon is forecast to be the first company worth over $1 trillion. Amazon are about to accomplish more than you will believe. It has been suggested, according to a recent poll of institutional investors, that most agreed that Amazon would reach these dizzying heights first of a market valuation of over $1 trillion. Now, this is... These kind of numbers you only hear when you talk about GDPs. So a single private, well, public company, but a $1 trillion market cap.
It's incredible. It's almost been predictable as well, in the sense of they just are taking over seemingly everything. And when you look at what they're trying to do with the automated home and within the robotic space, I remember when I first saw the a video saying that they're going to be delivering things via drones, and everyone thought that it was an April Fool's. And then I think they're basically there with it or something now. So it's incredible to know, but you can see why, because they're just so, I don't know if ruthless is the right word, but they're just...
Well, they certainly tend to dominate a space once they enter it, don't
Absolutely.
They? Yeah. But, I mean, just digging into this, they are one of a number of large tech companies that have been getting closer and closer to this sort of, this line, this $1 trillion mark. Amongst them, of course, are Alphabet, which is a parent company for Google, and Apple. According to CNBC reports, Apple's valuation just recently was $949 billion. So they're pretty close to that line. Alphabet's $870 billion or so. Amazon, $888 billion. So, you know, in that snapshot, they're not the closest. But I think you nailed it when you said they are just moving forward so fast at the moment.
Absolutely.
It's almost incredible to think they actually sold books one day, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
In terms of what they're doing these days.
Just books. And then off the back of that, they built some computer systems that they could run their e-commerce site on. And now that's turned into Amazon Web Services, which is one of the big driving divisions of Amazon that has contributed so much to the current valuation. But looking into the detail of this, they are waiting for an announcement for their second quarter earnings to be released after markets close on Thursday. And that's what's fueling this speculation, with over 70% of these investors who were surveyed believing that once those results come out, so they're going to be strong results, the market cap will hit over $1 trillion.
Incredible. And do we know what's driving that in terms of what's driving their revenue? That's
there are a number of things. So Amazon's shares were up 56% last Tuesday, compared to a 14% gain against Apple, and Google had about a 19% return. Much of this has been driven by amazing returns from Amazon Web Services. I think they've notched up $1.4 billion in operating profit during the most recent quarter. So that's profit. That's not even revenue. That is just cream.
Yeah.
And it's incredible. And according to Daniel Ives, Chief Strategy Officer and Head of Technology Research at GBH Insights, he told CBS, who interviewed him, Amazon just has all the wind at its back right now. It's hard to argue that Amazon is not just the most powerful company from a trend perspective, but he thinks has the greenest pastures ahead in terms of where they're heading. Of course, because they've got their fingers in so many pies.
Exactly, yeah. It's not, I mean, if you look at Apple and then if the smartphone disappears, which I'm sure it won't, and I've basing my life on that not happening based on my business, but if it does, you can kind of see, well, that's a huge area for them. Whereas with Amazon, it's difficult to see where if one thing got pulled, they still have so many other things to fall upon.
So diverse, it's crazy. Yeah.
No, and you look at it, I mean, of course, I won't say the name live on air, but their Echo, which is the new voice-activated service that's you know, personal assistant coming into so many homes, along with Google and others, is, you know, it's bringing these companies right into people's living rooms. It's touching them all the time.
Yeah.
And the services they're building out around it, one actual quite interesting one, that Amazon may be coming out with is something called a robo-advisor to help people and customers manage their money.
I'm certainly seeing quite a lot up in Birmingham in terms of AI around managing money. And you see a lot of chatbots now popping up where people are doing that. So if Amazon are getting their fingers into that pie as well, clearly there's a big market there.
It makes me wonder whether Amazon's just going to manage their money coming to them.
Exactly, yeah, they need a bit of help. But
every number I look on this story is just incredible. They're predicting, so come the predictions of a earnings per share of $2.48. That's up from 40 cents a share during the same period last year. So in just 1 year.
One of the influencers I've followed in the past is a guy called Gary Vee on social media, and he said a year ago, 2 years, buy Amazon. It seems expensive now, but they're just going upwards and upwards.
Yeah.
And you could probably say the same now, and they'll just continue to go upwards and upwards. But it's
probably,
so...
I mean, if any of this is going to continue, they are well placed. So, yes, it's definitely one to watch, maybe one still to invest in. They seem to crop up in so many of our stories. And with Jeff Bezos being officially the richest man in the world, with, I think, $112 billion in his personal valuation or more, it sounds like it's going to go up a bit soon as well. Yeah. So, fascinating. Let us know what you think about this. Are these numbers just too crazy to imagine? You can always let us know your thoughts on social media. Use the hashtag DisruptiveLive. Right, Phil, on to you. Now, you are the founder of Snoozle, is a social alarm clock.
Absolutely, yeah. So in its simplest form, we swap your alarm tone for voice messages from friends, which we call Snoozles, which can be 12 seconds long. So the idea came about in my final year of university, so 2011 that was.
What were your dummies whispering in your ear every morning to wake up?
It was on BlackBerry Messenger, and my girlfriend at the time used to send me a voice note. Aww. And I'd manually take that, put it as my alarm, and then waking up to a voice was much better than an alarm tone that I hated. And then you can put a song as your alarm tone, but ultimately if that keeps repeating. So we now automate that process through Snoozle. So every night I go to bed, set my alarm, and then I wake up to messages that I haven't yet heard, don't know what it's going to be. It might be motivation from my mates, it might be messages from girls, might be my mum telling me that she loves me. But it's different and it's new every morning, and makes waking up a dream, hopefully.
That's a really, really interesting spin on an alarm clock. But do your friends and family have to go and leave you a message, otherwise you won't wake up, or you get shocked with something else?
No, so if you have no Snoozles waiting for you, then we play a fallback alarm. So that is my voice explaining that we couldn't find any Snoozles for you. But obviously we don't want people waking up to that, we want them waking up to their friends. Yeah. But it's for us, it's very much kind of chicken and egg. If all of your friends are on it, we're targeting, in particular in the early days, 13 to 22-year-olds, we think. If all your friends are on it, then you've got plenty of content. The really tricky thing for us is you download it, you can love the idea, but if all of your friends aren't on it, what's that content going to be? So we've got our plans around that, but that's kind of the nature of the beast with any kind of social application.
And you can go onto the app and leave as many snoozles as you want for friends and family.
Yeah, absolutely.
And receive as many, and they just get queued up for you.
Yeah, so in the morning, I might wake up one morning to five snoozles that play consecutively and then they repeat. And then another, I might wake up to 40 snoozles. And because each of them is just 12 seconds long, you won't be there for hours listening to them. And if you do stop it, then they're just in the queue and you'll get them tomorrow.
The next day.
Yeah.
Right. So you don't have to listen to them out, and you also don't have to leave them every single day for someone.
Well, so once you've heard a snoozle, it then expires within 24 hours. So we're tapping into the, it's called volatile, my developer tells me, in
Got
terms
you.
of that content
A bit like
being
certain
deleted.
messenger
A bit like certain photo messenger apps, yeah.
apps.
And the reason we've done that is we want it to be fresh content, and it's a little bit more frivolous when people can send something that still lives for 24 hours on a timeline, but then
And how do they send a snoozle? Do they have to have the app on their phone as well, or can they send it in via different means?
No, so you download, and then similar to photo sharing apps, you send a snoozle, which is the 12-second voice message, and then select if you want to set it as your own alarm, as a self-reminder, set it as your story, which then goes out to anybody who's following you based on the permissions you've given, or you select individual friends that you want to send it to.
So I love the concept. I think it's great. I'll
Thank
have
you.
to download that after the show. But there's also a story to how you started the business. You did
Yep.
a bit of bootstrapping for your first minimum viable product.
I did indeed,
And when we were researching the show, my creative video editor managed to find a video of you.
Yeah, so there's a few videos of me out there because very, very randomly in 2015, my dad had pestered us for years and years, but me, my two brothers, and my dad went on Britain's Got Talent. And I certainly didn't see myself as a singer, never really sung before
We
as
can
an adult. We can
actually
see it there.
see
And literally went and we said, Dad, don't embarrass us. We're going to go on. If they say no, we just walk off. But it went very, very well. Got a standing ovation, got through to semi-finals, made Simon Cowell cry,
Amazing.
got through to the final, got beaten by a tightrope walking dog. But a wonderful
You
experience.
got beaten by the dog.
We did, yeah. But
Shame.
that gave me a lot of confidence to actually register snoozle. So I was working full time and still was. And then when we came off the show, we were gigging, still kept our jobs, all four of us, but we were gigging of a weekend. And that brought in a little bit of pocket money that allowed me to bootstrap the building of the first MVP for snoozle.
Right, so Snoozle owes a lot of its creative inception, its birth rather,
Yeah.
to you making Simon Cowell cry.
Exactly, yeah. So if Simon wants to get onto Snoozle and or David Walliams or Alicia or Amanda and wake people up every day, then that would be fantastic.
Yeah, maybe with a little song of their own.
Exactly.
Fantastic. So, I mean, you're doing great. You've also kind of got another record as well during your initial crowdfunding campaign.
Yeah,
Right.
so we believe that we're the fastest ever crowdfunding campaign
To reach its target.
to reach its target. Yeah, so we raised our target within 9 hours of going live on the platform. So there's a little caveat in there that some people go and raise 1 million, 2 million, etc. And we didn't quite do that. We did 100,000, but we did a campaign, Snoozy Lose, trying to get people to have a bit of fear of
I
missing
like
out
it.
or
I like
FOMO,
it. I like it a
and
lot.
and it worked, and it was great to see investors really seeing it, not just as a cool idea, because there is an element where people can say, well, that's lovely, but actually it's a bit of a gimmick. But actually, we think if you're waking up to content from your friends, if you're waking up to news headlines, if you're waking up to comedy, it might be that you're waking up to the share price of Amazon, for example, if you've got stocks in Amazon.
You want to hear that stock bell going, don't you, that
Exactly,
morning?
exactly. So this, the idea of a connected alarm clock, I can't believe hasn't been done fully, really. And we see the Echo, where you can now wake up to news headlines, etc. Mm-hmm. I would like to argue that that came after I had the idea for Snoozle. But that's where we want to get to. We're exploring the social capabilities now, but we'd mm-hmm. love to get to a point where we're curating content as well. So movement away from a clock radio, which is broadcast, and into where content's going, which is social and on demand.
Yeah, and being able to share that around your social network, I think it's quite cool.
Thank
that
you.
Personal reminder, perhaps, if you're getting up at the start of the day, going to school, or going to the first day of a new job, something like that. Holidays.
Exactly, holidays. Endless. Gym motivation, we're finding a lot of people use it for. So a bit of peer pressure from whether it's a personal trainer or from their friends. Kind of say, because it's that moment where you want to hit the snooze button. And we deliberately don't have a snooze button on Snoozle. It's that if you can just stimulate the brain with a message that might be funny, might be cute, might be motivational, then it is genuinely a better way to wake up, certainly I find, but I would
and
say that.
In terms of the future, I mean, you've already given me a bit of an idea of where you want to go, but in terms of building the company, where are you at? Are you looking for people to grow? Are you looking for another investment round? What's your immediate plan?
So our immediate plan is delighting our current users. Of course, we want to grow
that. There's the marketer.
Yeah, absolutely. but that genuinely is. So the metric that we're looking at is from somebody who signs up, are they setting their alarm that day? Are they setting it the next day? And trying to make sure that those drop-offs are as little as possible. Mm. So it's obviously all about users. But we think that to keep people on their content is obviously going to be so important. And we want to build a network of verified wake-up artists. That's content creators, influencers of any size, getting on there thinking, you know what, actually, this is a way that I can add a lot of value to my fans, to my audience, in the very first minute of their day, wake them up in a better mood. And obviously we're tuned into it, but you see a lot of influencers now doing something like an alarm clock on their story on other platforms.
Little sound bites in there.
Yeah, so it's us trying to convince them, you know what, actually, this is worthwhile, give it a go. So that building of our content on there as well is really important for us.
Very cool. Well, Phil, thank you for sharing
your
personal story as well as the story of Snoozle. And we'll have to have you back and keep the viewers updated on how you progress with Snoozle.
Thank you.
Right. So on to our second news item today. Zedspace unveils its AR/VR laptop designed for schools. Zedspace, an augmented reality and virtual reality company, have released a new laptop designed to enhance learning in schools and colleges. Now, we all have heard in recent years about augmented reality and virtual reality. You know, we can even drop our phones into Google Cardboard or other headsets that we can have a VR experience. Now, Zedspace has actually been around for a while, and they've got different technology to the normal, what you would think of with Microsoft HoloLens and virtual reality goggles like Oculus or any of the others. They use a special screen with polarized glasses like this, lenses like this, so that you can actually view the screen and the objects on that screen then become three-dimensional. But the beauty of what they're creating here with this laptop is they can allow a number of users to be viewing the same piece of augmented reality or the same image, whether that's an engine they want to take apart or maybe a piece of anatomy, and manipulate that in space. Now, they've had a lot of success in the US, which is where this story comes from. But I'd quite like to know what your opinions are, firstly, on the technology and if you see it being really valuable in education.
I think it's absolutely the right demographic to go after, because kids are just growing up with this technology. As you're saying, the thing about dropping your phone into a big set of goggles.
I remember then
my little nephew doing that years ago and thinking what a crazy thing he was doing, and who am I to say any different? But then I think you take it into the film industry and you get those films that have this thing where I always think, what was the one I was watching with my nephew not long ago? Was the like Iron Man ones where he's talking to the computer in effect, and he just takes apart these molecular structures and things.
Yeah.
And you think, yeah, and then you see it now appearing in the news on social media where people have got these demos of, you know, they're using it in, healthcare, aren't they, where they can almost do things where you can look at, take the brain apart and look at these different things. So that's obviously really futuristic, but it's people maybe who grew up with the technology are the ones who are inventing it now, I suspect. Mm-hmm. So I think grabbing them at that age, where everything from Echo, Snoozles, they're the adopters of it. The demographic you've mentioned there, Phil, is absolutely the one. So capturing them as early as you can on this journey. You know, I've got a little daughter who screams at, will not say the word, Echo, and plays out nursery rhymes all the time. And you can't avoid it. The technology's there and it's coming.
It's great. I mean, this particular company has been in this space long before it was mainstream in the last few years. They were founded actually in 2006. And interestingly enough, they got support from the CIA's InQtel fund. So they got some early backing from probably some very, very secretive analysts, most likely wanting to look at different ways of manipulating and viewing images. But then they quickly moved into other applications and they changed their name from, originally it was Infinite Z to Z Space. And now they're working with a lot of schools. I think Paul Kellenberger from Z Space said, when students put on a VR headset and take a field trip or explore human anatomy, they are having an individual experience. It doesn't encourage making connections, creativity, or collaboration. Z Space was created specifically for learners creating a shared AR and VR learning environment. So it's interesting, isn't it, that they've identified the fact that you do need to be engaged as a group with others to really start learning and talking about what you're seeing, as opposed to it being an individual experience.
And I think that's the key thing. It's about if I've gone into this virtual reality world and I'm seeing it from a different perspective than you are, we should be able to interact in some way. Yeah. I think there's an element with all new tech that comes out that can feel like, well, how are you going to apply that? But a huge thing with all of VR where you think the clear application there is games, like gaming. And if you can turn that into problem solving, games, teaching teamwork, teaching collaboration, that you can make it, I remember when I was at school, it was barrels and planks and you had to do various things. If you can make that in, you could change the gravity settings, you could change what you're actually playing with and make it much more fun for kids and they're interacting with each other. I think that's where it really comes into its own as a piece of technology. It's got to be that interaction with other people where if I move something within the world, it moves in everyone else's world as well, not just seeing images from different perspectives.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of clever tech here. They have had sort of workstations that they've used. And I think students at more than 800 schools, school districts, technical centres, medical schools and universities currently use a Z Space system. But this new laptop that they've unveiled incorporates all of that technology. Wow. But it's portable, and the laptop can still be used as a laptop. You can turn it off so that kids can use that to go on the internet, do their homework, submit reports, whatever it might be, as well as to be able to flick a button and, you know, explore the inner workings of a plant or an animal or a piece of technology itself with their colleagues.
Yeah. It's amazing. Without being too much of a Scrooge, as it were, sometimes when I see this technology going into schools, I know this is in America and whatnot, and I just think there's so many things beforehand from a tech perspective that schools could be doing now that this feels down the line, whereas I'm amazed that somebody leaves school and they've never seen a line of code in their life. Like now they're going through school and they're not understanding the basics that... You might not become a coder, but just understanding it to some capacity or just getting how tech works. And that's the sort of thing where I wonder, why isn't that in our schools?
Why is it a language? What are the syntax? How do you construct
exactly.
it? At least being able to see it, because it's behind almost everything these days.
Yeah.
But anyway, talking about good applications of technology, Mark, I want to move on to your particular solution that you're here to tell us about.
Yeah.
Now, Pinnacle Solutions works in a number of areas.
Yes.
And more recently, you've been developing some IoT, very smart IoT solutions.
Yeah.
But now you're about to release one for social care.
Yes.
So just tell me, how does IoT and social care come together?
It's part of the journey that we're on with the Internet of Things and IoT. So we started out with a property management solution using sensors in houses, a network and an application. But during that journey, we uncovered things along the lines of, you know, in a tenant, we might identify there's a potential fuel poverty situation where, you know, someone's not maybe being looked after in the right way. And that was by accident, really, because we were really looking at the health of the property, not really the health of the tenant. But fuel poverty took us on that journey that you then start to see there's all sorts of analysis out there. You know, there's more and more, it's prevalent, isn't it? We know the NHS and the pressures that they're under are immense. And then all of a sudden, through our network of all these people in IoT, someone said to me, you need to go and talk to this person. I think they've got a solution that might complement what you're doing from a property with more of a personal solution. So over a few months now, we've had these conversations and we're about to go public on the partnership that we've got now. And it's really aimed at the sort of introduction of it is a domiciliary care solution. So people who are having care at home. There's all sorts of statistics out there, and I'm not normally a stats fan, but I think something about the average cost of someone under domiciliary care is about £17,000 a year. If they go in a home, it can jump to £35,000, £40,000 a year. And then if they actually you end up in hospital, then quite frankly, we're talking serious numbers in terms of you put a real cost of someone being in that hospital bed. So the solution we've got is similar to the property one. It's sensors that go into the property. And there's really four key sensors that we're looking at. You've got things like a door door trigger, so front doors or back doors, bathroom doors, but you know, a door one. A vibration sensor, which can go perhaps, you know, down the back of the favourite chair or under the bed. Temperature and humidity, perhaps that one would go near the kettle, something like that. And then a motion sensor as well around the house, so that you've got. And really what you have there is the you're going to build a trend, a pattern. We're habitual creatures, and particularly for those in care, I think it's fair to say, are quite routine driven. So all those sensors spend a few weeks building up an analysis of, Phil, you go to bed at 1 o'clock in the morning, you late stay up, David, you're in bed at 9 o'clock. And it'll sort of builds up what time you go to bed. You know, dare I say, do you get up in the night to go to the toilet, the bathroom? What time do you get up in the morning? Do you go downstairs and put the kettle on? Do you go and sit in the chair and read the paper? Do you move around the house? Do you go outside at certain things? And really what that is that's the core of building up a pattern. But the entire solution is actually one that incorporates, you know, the VIP is what they're referred to in this scenario, not a patient or anything. The social care organisation, possibly the local authority social services, and even you can bring, obviously, like I said, the NHS are looking at these things. But more importantly, it involves the family of the person. So then what you have is, you know, again, social care organisation, they've got 10 visits to make today, people at home, and an individual's on there in their set routine. But if one of those scenarios is not playing out as it should in terms of the trend of that individual, it would flag it instantly through the application. So that's everything from the sort of carers could reorganise their day and go and see David earlier than I would do because you're not out of bed and it's now 11 o'clock and that's unusual. We know you've got a mobility issue. And it might be even something trivial that you go and you make the visit, you let yourself in, you say hello, and then you find that the person's up in the bedroom and they've maybe knocked the Zimmer frame over, which actually meant they can't move around the house. But at least you've just been and attended. And then the application goes even further into that, that, you know, the visit reports that people would complete on doing a home visit is done on an app. Everything's all that driven. So it's all being real time fed. That app goes off up into the cloud and people behind this, I believe, you know, you've got people like IBM and IBM Watson are behind some of this technology. They're sort of involved in it. And all of that data is correlated, collected. And then again, social care organisations are under the powers of like the CQC, the Care Quality Commission. And if they're asked to do reports, that can be a very intensive procedure. Everything, dare I say, with an application like this is online. Let me just click a button and print that report for you and send it. And then, as I said, the real, really valuable one, and I think it's one that you can I can relate to, you know, in my personal circumstances with relatives, is the fact that I'm part of that whole experience. So I know that Phil has been to see my dad. And not only that, he's filled in the report, he's telling me how he is, he's took a picture of him. You take pictures of them and you're building up analysis of people's features. So you're actually starting to really go into areas where you even start through regular photographs, pick up a stroke or some other ailment or illness, and someone's general well-being as well. Are they on a bit of a downward spiral and things like that? But I get that report instantly as well. And I can go, great, my dad's up. But also I could be part of the alerting mechanism. So when something isn't right, I can quite easily just say, I pick up the phone, ring my dad and see how he is and check everything's okay. So that's a solution that we're about to come out to market to. We're really excited about it. We've piloted it at a couple of conferences and promoted it. And I would say, you know, we're near 100% of interest in this. I think it's very topical. Yeah. We know all the stresses and strains of care for family members, the public sector, the NHS. So we think this solution could be a really good one to bring to market.
It sounds like an incredible solution. And there are a few things that just I really love about this. It is incredibly topical. You know, we do talk about care in the community, but I think what you're actually enabling to happen with this platform is to create a community of carers, not just care in the community, because it's going to be friends and family, anyone you want to tie into the platform, as well as, of course, the social carers that are funded either by the NHS or by local authorities and bodies. But everybody being able to work together.
Yeah.
And, you know, we live busy lives. We're more isolated.
Yeah.
The population is getting older. So you can sort of see this perfect storm of people just becoming entirely disconnected from friends, family, and services that are there to help them. I don't know what else to say other than I really wish you all the best with getting this out into the market. I think you're going to get a lot of support from a lot of different technology vendors, as well as service providers, and of course, government and social bodies. It just seems like a great way to pull all this together.
Yeah, I mean, for us, it's a partnership that is the right thing to do. We can't invent everything, you know. We can't do everything, but finding companies and people we can work with and fit with that culture and our strategy and our goal is absolutely perfect for us.
And I mean, little things like I don't know, the quintessential bus problem, where you don't see anyone for 2 weeks and then all of a sudden on one day five people turn up.
Yeah.
But with this, you can know if someone hasn't been for a while or a family member went yesterday, then perhaps it's okay to visit today or tomorrow. Yeah. And also for friends to tie into that and just know, well, now's a good time to go for a cup of tea.
Yeah,
I think it's great. Mark, thank you.
Thank you.
For coming on and telling me about Pinnacle's social care solution.
Thank you.
Right, and talking about cutting edge technology, we're going to peer into the future a little more with this story. So big tech companies are competing to create the ultimate Android or home robot. Companies such as Amazon, Huawei, and Alphabet are investing an extraordinary amount of time and resources into the development of home robots, with some expected to be available in 2020. So we've already spoken about Amazon today.
Just about to say.
And we rarely don't touch on the likes of Google. But yeah, these giant companies, it's almost inevitable, are secretly working on the next generation of home robots, whether they be bipedal, arms, true Android, or whether they be something a bit more mundane that scurries around your house cleaning it. Although we have seen home robots already for the last 10 years or so, like the Rombo, I think it's, the vacuum cleaner that goes around. iRobot calls Roomba, that's it, that's been around for a while. But now they're looking at investing heavily into the space. We've already spoken about Echo and Google's Home Assistant, as well as many others, being that voice assistant in the home. But soon that voice assistant might grow arms and legs and be able to do stuff.
Do the ironing, do the cleaning.
Well, I just saw on that video there that it's an alarm clock as well, so I need to hurry up with snoozing if this is coming. We can integrate. It's a thing of sci-fi movies of kind of 20 years ago that is now coming true. And how often does that happen, where something that seems farcical or seems a dystopian or utopian future then actually comes real. I think there's something lovely about it, but I personally don't want to see them be too human. And I think that's the reservation that a lot of people have. When they think of these robots, they think of eyes, mouth, talking to you, have you had a nice day, etc. And I think the voice assistants get it quite nicely because you can have a conversation with them and it feels human enough, but you're not confusing it for an actual
human
living being that has feelings that you can develop attachments to. And I think that's where the mind goes to when you think of an in-home robot that makes people feel a bit uncomfortable.
There have been a number of shows on the television, or movies in fact, that kind of touch on this subject.
Yeah.
But that, you raise a good point, because there has been research conducted into how people interact, and apparently something that doesn't look anything like us, that rates very highly. Otherwise, the tipping point is not being able to distinguish. So if it's close, it tends to freak people out. Yeah. If you're going for it and you don't absolutely achieve that sort of android, it just causes people to get freaked out. Although I'm sure there are some fetishes out there that don't mind too much.
Different industry.
Very different industry we don't tend to cover on this particular news show. But it is a big place, the internet, so I'm sure it's out there if you are interested. but according to Gene Munster, co-founder of Loop Ventures, he actually expects the US market for home robots to quadruple to more than 4 billion by 2025.
And what's constituting a robot there? Is a coffee machine a home robot?
Well, potentially it could be if it grounds its own beans and you give it voice instructions. Mm. It has certain robotic features. If it plans to destroy the world, then yes.
Yeah. Because we hear these numbers in terms of industries that are coming forward, but with Jeeves walking around in your home, with no spend actually within that space now from a consumer perspective, I can't get my head around this 4 billion by this time, because it's a complete. Projection by people who want those projections to be high.
It's a good question, because does it include smart devices?
Yeah.
And smart home appliances are certainly one of them. I mean, at the moment, they fall into sort of the IoT category. They're a connected device, Internet of Things. But robots, you kind of expect them to have a certain amount of autonomy, whether that's in choosing where to be in your home. So the Roomba is a good example. It's a vacuum. Yeah. It maps your home environment.
Yeah.
It knows how to optimize the route to make sure your floor's always clean. You can even put a little cat looking like a shark on top of it. Fantastic for YouTube and other video sharing sites. But it remains to be seen, because, I mean, these big tech companies, this story is all about how they're secretly investing. So there is not much information out there yet. We've even got Alphabet, Google's parent company's X division. And we've heard about the X division in things like bringing internet to all parts of the world, whether it be balloons or with drones or other things, and how companies are working on that. They're taking a slightly longer term of view, apparently. Some unnamed engineers have been saying they're exploring the ability for robots, home robots, to go up and down stairs. So we're heading towards the sort of Jetson end of a home robot that can move around, might be a bit mechanical, but they've got about a 10-year horizon. So they don't even know if it's going to be for commercial domestic use or what it's going to be, or maybe more for hotels and places like that. But it looks like they're all getting in on the game. And of course, companies like Amazon and Google that have been developing the AI around natural language processing and these personal assistants, maybe it won't be long before they're in a body of their own.
I'm sure it won't be too long, yeah. It's, we saw there with the, in the video, somebody picking this android up and then putting it down on another dock, which gives you an element of control if you do want privacy. There might be some scenarios, without going down that route again, where you don't want a robot walking in. So I think it's, I'm not of the mindset that we should fear this kind of technology, because I do think we'll put the enough fullbacks in place, and they'll be fairly limited still, no matter how intelligent they get. People say AI, as good as it is, it's still quite basic at this point. It's still, yeah, you have to teach it an algorithm, then it learns. So I think we're a long way off the kind of human replica, but I'm sure we'll get there at some point, particularly with those companies
not
investing.
Not quite Bishop out of Aliens or HAL 9000 or exactly any of those sci-fi movies. But it is fascinating. Huawei's robot is an interesting spin on it. They're designing a robot to teach kids English. So it's hopefully going to work by doing live translation of Chinese to English, so that the children can learn the English language. Maybe, yeah? So that's an interesting spin. They do mention it's probably only going to be available for the Chinese market, but they have got engineers working in San Francisco and Boston. And it is most likely going to be Amazon, given their track record, their deep pockets, as we found out today. But of course, they use huge amounts of automation in their logistics distribution centers. So they're already working with manufacturers. They're already solving all sorts of communication, navigation, mobility, reliability challenges that all have to be faced. And of course, they've got the artificial intelligence, human interface piece going on. So you can see them kind of connecting the dots potentially first.
Absolutely.
It's then, you know, how much capacity do you have to get a consumer price point? And again, someone that has those connections with manufacturers and supply chains, you know, they could bring a lot to bear in order to bring these to market quite soon at a price that's affordable.
I think that's the thing, isn't it? I mean, going back to the robot you said about Amazon and distribution centers and probably pioneers of that kind of robotics. I think, was it only a few weeks ago that Ocado, the home shopping, if you would, perhaps it's part of Waitrose, I wanted to say, but Ocado, and they developed a whole thing of automated picking, packing, taking it over to packer. And they've actually sold the sort of rights to it. And I want to say for so many hundreds of millions to sell about half a billion, they've sold the technology for, or the sort of ways of how they've done it so people could go and replicate it. So they need to...
That pick and pack process is actually incredibly complicated. And the coordination between the different bots and making sure that the right produce is there, it's a fantastic challenge. So maybe if they turn their minds to the washing up, it shouldn't be too hard.
Anything that can keep that can keep my house clean, I'd be more than happy.
Dishwashers have been around for a while.
Oh, really?
Is it? Well, as in actual dishwashers.
Right, oh, that kind of dishwasher. But you've got to load them yourself.
Yeah, that's true. I've never worried about loading a dishwasher, but maybe I will in 10 years' time. There's so many things now which you think, well, why do people do that way? And in 10 years' time, people might be looking like, you used to load your own dishwasher.
It's when it tells you off that you've had that dish on the side of the kitchen for 3 days. Yeah. How dare you put that in me in a small time?
Well, on that note, that's all we have time for this week. Thank you so much for joining us. If you've enjoyed the show, please let us know on social media, along with any suggestions about what you'd like to see in the future. You can do that on our Twitter feed at Disruptive Live using the hashtag Disruptive Live, or just message us on our Facebook page. It has been a truly fun show. Gentlemen, thank you for joining me today. It's been fascinating and enjoyable. You've been watching Disruptive Live. I've been David Organ, and I will see you again next week.